You're listening to the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at RadioReverb.com or on our podcast. I'm Ailey Packham and this show is brought to you in association with OldFootballShirts.com. Joining myself and Alan Wares today is a man whose career has spanned four decades and whose voice is familiar to millions. It's Peter Brackley. Welcome to the show, Peter.
It's very nice to be here and a great honour too. Did you say four decades or 14?
I only said four.
It might be a bit of each, but there you are.
Well, welcome. It's been well documented that you're a Brighton fan, Peter. So why don't you tell us about your Brighton supporting history?
Yeah, well, I was born in this area and lived here for 30-odd years around Sussex. And came back again about 10 years ago, so I'm back into the scene again a bit more now. Mm-hmm. But I first started watching the Albion back in the late 50s, really, and early 60s was the time I remember more. I was very young.
Can you remember your first game?
I can't remember the actual first game, but one of the first would have been the famous Burnley game, the FA Cup tie, mm-hmm. early 60s, the 3-3 draw people still talk about, and Bob McNichol's goal from... Well, I've read 30 yards, 40 yards, 50 yards. Depends if you're there or not, but it's a long way out anyway.
To put some context to that, I'll just say that back in the early 60s, Burnley were the east side.
They were the champions.
Drawing 3-3 with Man City and Chelsea nowadays.
They had internationals aplenty, and they were the top team in the land, and we held them at the Goldstone. I think it was about 28,000 there. We would have been second division, third division.
Second division.
Whereabouts in the Goldstone were you?
I used to stand on the East Terrace to start with my dad and my brother. I used to have a little stall there. A lot of people tell you
milk crates.
Milk crates, yeah. There's a little story from years ago. I came back to the Goldstone to do a match for ITV. And they actually built a gantry on the East Terrace.
They did, scaffolding.
And during the commentary, I said, and I used to stand over there. And I actually said the North Stand, because I used to stand the North Stand when I was a teenager. And I said to the director on the talkback, can you give me a shot of the North Stand? And he said, there it is, the North Stand. And I said, just where I used to stand. In fact, I said, that guy was there 30 years ago, standing there. And he said, is he? I said, no, he isn't really. I'm joking, you idiot.
But that was, back then, when there was wasn't an awful lot of football on television.
No.
That was the telltale sign that the game was going to be on TV when you saw the...
It was a bit of a clue, wasn't it, when people were climbing up a ladder to watch the games. And some games were so bad, they tried to change them at half-time, I think, but no. They did, that's quite right, though, didn't they? You had to try and guess which it was, whereas now they're all on. And,
it's quite bizarre, actually, because, you commentating on a Brighton match, I remember Des Lynam commentating on a Brighton match, and you think, surely, that, I'll ask you, how did you maintain a semblance of balance, or didn't you bother?
With
commentating on a Brighton match?
I wasn't allowed to do too many of them.
All right.
I did the semi-final, the cup semi-final. I did for Central. I'd just gone to ITV, and I was working for Central Television. So Brian Moore did it for the rest of the country, and I just did it for Central. It was a bit Midlands. But they wouldn't let me near too many other ones, and I was fine. If anything, everybody gets... Clive Tilsley, Alan Parry, they all get accused of being biased. One or two are maybe, but not as... And quite often people get the wrong one. They say, he's biased towards Man United. He's actually not a Man U fan.
Alan Parry's a Liverpool fan.
Alan Parry's Liverpool. I don't think there's any doubt about that. But I was a Brighton fan. I didn't get asked to do that many TV games because Brighton weren't on the telly that often.
Sure.
I didn't do the final. I went to the final just as a fan and loved it with everybody else. And if I ever see Gordon Smith, I'll lynch him. Yeah. Actually, rang me up. And Smith must score. He actually rang me up for trying to get a job on the Italian football.
Oh, right.
I told whoever answered the phone, I said, I'm not speaking to the man who's ruined my life. And he actually put Gordon on the phone, and Gordon was, I'm sorry, but I'm only joking.
Okay, well, we're going to come back and talk to Peter about his career. Well, let's come back to Peter then. Well, we had a Johnny Cantor in here, who's the current BBC commentator. Now, he said that his first commentaries were commentating on a Sputio game when he was a kid. Now, did you do something similar to that? What made you want to be a commentator?
Yes, Sputio, that's quite right. Yes, I did, yeah. And also at school, apparently, I read on forums and things, people say, I went to school with Peter and he used to commentate to himself running down the wing. And I did actually used to do a little bit of this.
That sounds like Dick Emery.
I wanted to be a commentator. I wanted to be some kind
I guess the main man was Kenneth Walson.
Who I was honoured to work with in later years at Football Italia. And they decided to get Kenneth in to do some of the voiceovers, just to meet him and talk with him. That lovely rich voice that he had, and it was wonderful stuff.
Kid in a sweet shop, imagine, at the time, weren't you?
I would say He would be the first one that I would remember, and then David Coleman, of course. Yeah.
Did you get to work with him as well?
Not really, no. I met him a few times, but not actually to work with him.
I mean, you started your career at the BBC.
But yeah, I did down here, yeah, in Brighton, yeah.
But you didn't you never really did much commentary work for the BBC on television?
No, not on television, no. In those days, we couldn't do commentaries on matches anyway. You couldn't do a full commentary on local radio. Mm. And then Des Lynam actually was working on local radio just before me. He moved on to London, and I sort of followed him around for a bit, and I didn't do any radio commentaries until I went to Radio 2. That was the BBC. Mm. And I just started doing, I did about 2 years of those, and then I got a chance to go to TV. And it's a difficult one. Should you have longer in radio first to get a bit more experience?
Well, let's talk a bit more about your time at Radio Brighton, because, I mean, you started there in the 70s, and that was a real hotbed of talent there. I mean, you had the likes of Jeremy Paxman.
Paxman was
Lynam.
There, yes, he was a bit bolshy then.
I think Kate Adie started in Brighton.
She was there, yeah.
And, of course, Des before that. I mean, Des was working, I think, locally as an insurance agent, and they used people, as I'm sure they do now on local radio, just to come in and do things at the weekend, and Des went in and did all that. And
what was your role at Radio Brighton?
I started off, well, I was actually a journalist. I was one of the few that were actually journalists somewhere else. I was on a newspaper, just local newspapers.
Right.
And I got a chance to go in. I was only about 19, I think, and I was covering Worthing football and Ferring and Shoreham, whoever, and
then Heights.
Somebody said come in and do some radio reporting, so I had a go at that, and then eventually I got the job of the sports editor there, so I covered Brighton, and I went to all the away games, and took my wife, and great fun, yeah.
So you were on the football special trains and things like that?
Yeah, one of the trains, yeah. Well, I took my wife on one, she thought Brighton and Hove Albion were three teams, so it was a bit difficult, but she knew nothing about football at all, and she'll tell you the story. Pat Saywood was the manager, we went up to Blackpool, and the guy playing called Brian Bromley, a very good little midfielder called Brian. And my wife didn't understand football and thought he'd been spoofing and feigning this injury. And she actually berated him at the station. Saywood and the other, they were on the same train. They all thought it was hilarious. The manager, the player, the poor guy didn't play again for about 6 months. But
we'll get back to radio in a tick. But actually, you just mentioned your wife there. But you said that a Brighton manager actually berated you for actually getting married in the first place.
Yeah, Brian Clough, yes. When I'd just become sports editor at Radio Brighton. And Cloughy came down and imagine the euphoria at the time.
Is he in your repertoire of impersonation?
Yes, sort of, yeah. And Brian was, in those days, I mean, he was frightening. He was actually a terrifying person. He was at the top of his game. I mean, he was at the peak of his powers. He was a very difficult man. They said to me, you've got to go and interview him. And I was just doing the local radio interview, as far as I knew. And then the BBC 9 o'clock news said, we can't get our man there. You're going to have to do it. I said, I'm not interviewing him. He's horrible. But then I had to go and do this. And there are pictures, I think, on YouTube of me with his long hair, a kipper tie, and a check jacket.
Sexy.
Yeah, and
he's still got on today.
It was one of the first times that he'd said the young man thing.
All right.
And I said, are you good? I suddenly got up courage to say, are you going to be a little bit controversial, Mr. Clough? And I prefer to call it a touch of honesty, young man.
Yes, it is part of his repertoire.
But he actually, the wedding thing is true. He called me. When Brian called, you went round, you got summoned to go to the office, and I got this call to go round to Brian's office, and he said, come and sit down. He said, I understand you're getting married tomorrow, young man. I said, I am, Brian. Yes, it's all arranged. You know, we're looking forward to it. The whole family came. You're not. He said, you were at home to Tranmere Rovers, and you should be here. And he was not joking. I promise you, he was not joking. He was really upset that I was getting married on a Brighton match day.
Well, it's something when you actually get married during the football season.
Well,
the thing with Brian was, surely.
The next second, Brian then says, anyway, carpets. I said, pardon? He said, carpets. Do you want some carpets? And he's now gone from berating me for getting married on a match day to setting up a deal with a local carpet company to furnish my house. That was Brian. You had no idea. Somebody said, you go and see Brian Clough, you take a gun in one hand and a bottle opener in the other. You had no idea how he was going to respond. There's a little story about when he finally met his match. He's at Nottingham Forest. And he phones down the dressing room, which is absolutely true. And a young lad answers the phone, probably Roy Keane or someone. He said, bring me a cup of tea to my office immediately. I'm busy. Do you know who this is speaking? No, it's me, Brian Clough, manager of this football club, and as far as you're concerned, a very important person, young man.
I see. Do you know who this is speaking? I have absolutely no idea at all who you are, young man. Good. Get your own flipping tea.
That's a true story.
If only we're allowed to swear on this radio show.
may have been the odd word that I left out there.
Maybe, but...
Possibly. Yeah.
Fantastic.
But you moved out of radio and went into television. And this was at the time when you did that. I mean, the only live game that was on TV was the FA Cup final or the World Cup or the Euros. So, I mean, it was a burgeoning thing at the time, wasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, early 80s, there were very, very few live games, and I think, I went to ITV just as they were sort of starting on the, what was the old First Division then?
Yeah.
And I did do one or two of those before the 86 World Cup, and then I did some at the World Cup. But no, they weren't the volume of games that you see now.
Well, it's an all-encompassing media machine now, isn't it? Mm. Really?
But yeah. That's a great phrase. What was that phrase again?
I've written that one down as well.
Okay, fine, yeah. Okay, cliched, he's on fire today.
Fight is something or other.
Yeah. But it's, I mean, it is. I mean, do you think now, as opposed to what it is then, there is too much football on television?
Well, probably, but I mean, you try telling people that watch it, you know, that people want to watch live football. It's quite hard. I mean, Match of the Day remains, and there are other recorded highlights programmes, but people now, I find, mainly want to watch the live games. You catch up with things on Match of the Day. It's an institution. It'll always be there. But back
well,
then,
I mean, it's moved around quite a lot through the schedules. I mean, yeah. it has been lost for a few seasons, and it keeps coming
back. About Match
and,
of the Day.
Yeah, and Match of the Day for me always, is part of my Saturday routine.
They always had a fight with the big match, because the big match was always on the Sunday afternoon with Brian Moore. And I love the fact that you could tell where the location of a match by the commentator, because obviously ITV was fragmented back in
the day. Yeah, I was in the Midlands, somebody else was up north.
I think we had Martin Tyler for Southern.
Martin was, and Gerald Williams as well did it for a while.
Wasn't Dave Lanning as well?
Dave Lanning, the Speedway commentator, and
the dance one.
Football wasn't his subject, and he kept going on about Alan Ward in the game and Peter Ward. live football is completely different now. Obviously, people want the live football. When I started doing the Italian football, I mean, there was no, the Sky were doing live games. Of course, it wasn't the Premier League then. So
no, but
the Italian football was a must for a lot of people because it was the only major live football on terrestrial television.
Well, basically, I mean, you moved from radio into television. Now, doing commentary on radio and television is a completely different beast. I mean, how did you find that transition?
Well, I hadn't done radio for that long, so maybe it wasn't quite so hard for me, but you're painting a picture on radio that you have to try to remember when you're doing TV games, people can see for themselves. So that's the main thing you have to remember. And you're trying to tell them something they haven't seen, or just give them some information that they need. And old Brian Moore used to say to me, you know, he said that when you're doing a commentary, the viewers, the audience at home, are a guest in your lounge. They're sitting in your front room. They're sitting next to you. They want to enjoy it with you. You've just got a bit more knowledge than they have. And that's really how you should treat it. But on radio, you've got to describe everything.
You're painting pictures.
You're painting pictures, yeah. Mm. When I started there, I was working with Peter Jones and Brian Butler, the two. I've just been in the same room, let alone doing a commentary with them. For me, that was
Peter Jones was the Ann Smith Must Score fellow.
He was actually. It was Peter who said it. But Peter was to all of us, was the doyen of commentators, certainly on radio, and his ability to paint a picture and Brian Butler's use of words was something that we all aspired to. And we went to the station to buy the tickets for the train, and he just said to the guy behind the desk, he said, "Can I return to Ipswich, please?" And the guy said, "Brian Butler! Brian Butler!" And they could tell just a few words. He had such a distinctive voice.
Sorry, I'm going to be a real creep here. So have you. So, you know, it's
well, like, AD.
Not AD.
No. Well, so the voice you've given us, you can't do much about it.
Of course, but
I think also you've got to remember years ago when Peter O'Sullivan and people like this were doing it, they were the only ones doing it. So we do tend to notice their voices a bit more. Now there are umpteen football commentators on, and a lot of them, with no disrespect at all, do sound quite similar.
They do, definitely.
One of the things, the same training school.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, you came from the generation where we had Brian Moore and we had Barry Davis and Motti, and they're all very, very unique voices and unique in their own ways. I mean, Barry Davis was a real, that's your favourite, isn't it?
I think Barry Davis, with all due respect to the chap sitting to my right, here, Barry Davis was always my favourite. So yeah, he I think Peter is.
No, he's on tonight. Actually, he's on Match of the Day.
He is.
But he's at Palace.
He's at Palace West Ham, which is absolutely
so. The two cancel each other out, really. Don't
a little
they?
Bit. But,
I
mean,
you know, watching now.
Unless West Ham score and Barry Davis starts laughing.
Yeah, he's a lovely guy, Barry, and very well respected in the business. As they all are, the guys at that level.
Yes.
Coleman, for all of us, was the voice for commentary. If you listen to some of the old athletics commentaries, I was lucky enough to be in Moscow for the Koa vet race in the Olympics, and I heard the race later. I obviously didn't hear it at the time, but I heard him doing the commentary, and I still got the same hairs standing up on my neck listening to Coleman say, "Here comes Steve Ovett, eyes like chips of ice," and all this. And he had incredible phrases that he'd come up with.
Sure.
Short phrases, not long descriptions.
Were you ever on the receiving end of his irie? Because he could be quite a stroppy fella as well.
Coleman, I mean, I won't do it now. We do an after dinner speech. I do a Gary Richardson for the BBC, and I do a double act thing. We do a Coleman routine in which he gets the names wrong and things. It's a funny routine, but he could be very, very sharp with producers. And there is a famous recording somewhere of him slagging off a producer.
Moving the cameraman and move that camera.
But one of the the common ones that I remember was it's from the 70 World Cup final when he says, "What you're about to see is..."
No, that's 62. That was the Battle of Santiago.
That's the World Cup game. Yeah. I saw that the other day on something. That was
brutal. And Ken Aston was the referee.
But Coleman had that voice, and he had those phrases. They would be just...
Dez's was "It's there." I'm just trying to think here. I'm struggling here. What were your cliched phrases? The ones that you used every single time.
Every single time. I'm not sure there's any one in particular. I'm sure people listening will think of some.
There's a brilliant clip on YouTube of one of your commentaries, which was
really.
It was brilliant. Right. It was the game finished 6-6. It was
Tranmere Newcastle.
Basically, when the sixth equaliser went in, it was exactly the same as the first equaliser. It was
I did the game with Big Ron, and he hated it. I'm sort of early on saying, "This is great," you know, but it was a Zenith Data Systems Cup, so there were only five people there anyway.
Yeah.
And Ron, the pros hate this sort of game; they just think it's a training game. And when it got to 6-4, and Ron was shaking his head, and he did not like it at all. And when it got to 6-6, and I probably was looking at him as I was saying it, because it didn't seem real, and it wasn't real, and it was like just a training ground match. Yeah. But it was actually, I think, 6-6.
Okay. Before we move on, we just need to talk about we did lose one of the great voices this week, which was James Alexander Gordon.
Yes, yeah.
I mean, did you get to work with him?
Yes, when I was on Radio 2, and he obviously did the football results at 5:00, and he would come into the office where we were about 10 to 5, and there's an old guy there who used to type all the results out for him. So that's how it was done in those days. You just type all the results out and hand it to him, and he'd just take it and walk into the booth and then just reveal all these names and his wonderful intonation. And I've actually done the reading the football results. It's quite hard to discipline yourself to say Arsenal 1, Newcastle 1, Liverpool 2, Everton 3. You know, you've got to remember each time to get that intonation right. But he was absolutely...
But it got to the point where it was always Brighton Hove Albion nil. I thought nil was actually part of the name.
I know, and that's a very old joke and a very good one. But he actually had a little story about him.
Billy Connolly,
we used to stay overnight in a place called the Langham, just across the road from Broadcasting House, and there was a very strong rumour, but I think there was a ghost. And James had a wooden leg. He actually did have a wooden leg.
Oh, right.
And he apparently unscrewed it one night and threw it at what he thought was the ghost. And he happily regales everyone with his story of the ghost and his leg. He's a lovely fellow, a wonderful guy. And he would just come in so relaxed and cool and just read his results.
What I always wanted from him was because you could tell who, you know, with not the score, but certainly a win, lose, or draw by the intonation of the first team. Mm-hmm. You know, so if it was draws, so and so nil, so and so nil. But I always wanted it that he'd have it that
the other way around.
If Crystal Palace lost, he'd do it as if they won. So Brighton and Hove Albion 3, Crystal Palace nil. You think, bit of joy in them, that kind of thing.
We actually got him to record a spoof thing once where he actually left out the names of the teams. So we sort of do it at the dinner speech. We say, this is a chap who had to hurry up and finish. He's got to get to the pips in time. And so he had to leave something out, didn't know what to leave out. So this is what he said. And he just says, 1-0, 4-1, 2-0, 4-3.
Beep, 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 beep. That's the time coming up to 5:00.
It's very funny. It's actually James is reading.
Fantastic.
Yeah, okay.
Hang on, we've got an Italian football expert.
I don't speak Italian. I don't know. I'm an expert.
Ben told to give. Forget
it.
And the fabulous name, Lorenzo Squeezy. There we go.
Squeezy. Yeah.
Squeezy. A bit unlikely, but okay. Well done. I actually had a guy that did all the pronunciations for me, an Italian. Yeah, we lived in England and spoke perfectly in both languages, so he told me how to say them. But what we decided early on was that we wouldn't try and say it like Eddie's done it. We wouldn't try and sort of we're talking to an English audience mainly. There were a lot of Italians.
Because I think James Richardson used to refer to them as Milan, didn't he?
Well, he did, because that's what, and he lived in Milan, so that's right. Why. And it is.
Good old AC, Jimbo.
Is he a mate of yours or something then?
I've never met him, but it's like it.
The Gazetta Saturday morning programme was really very, very popular. It was totally down to him.
Okay. Yeah. Program. All right.
Anyway, go on.
Well, let's talk.
He's still reading this stuff. Are you finished this bit now?
No, I've moved on from that now. We're moving on to Football Italia.
I thought we had.
Yes, I know.
They had a lot of flairmeisters in Italian football, for those of you who weren't listening.
Flairmaestros.
Now, Football Italia.
Maestros. Is Italian, isn't it? So,
Football Italia started when Paul Gascoigne went to Lazio. I mean, would it have started? it if it wasn't for that? No,
I don't think that. What happened was Neil Duncanson, who was a very innovative producer, went to Channel 4 and said, look, Paul Gascoigne's going out to play for Lazio. He's big news. Everything he does, everybody wants to know. Why don't we put Channel 4 onto, or put Italian football on Channel 4? They bought the idea, but it was actually, yes, because Gazza was going to play. And of course, first game, he's injured, didn't play. Mm. But the audience was colossal. For you know, Channel 4, for Sunday lunchtime, it was sort of 3.5 million or something. Yes. For them, that's colossal.
That's pretty good
at that stage. So the fact that he didn't play actually didn't matter. And he didn't play, I don't think, for quite a few weeks.
And if I remember rightly, I could be wrong, I think I do, it was also the first season where the back pass, where the goalkeeper could pick up the ball from a back pass, was outlawed.
I can't remember, you might be right there.
And I remember that the English goalkeepers, when he could pass it back to a goalkeeper in an English game, he'd just launch it up the field. Whereas... when you watched it in Italy, you saw, like we finally get to see now, when we first saw it under Gus Poyet, is rather than the keeper just launch it, he'd actually then play it out to one of the defenders. And I thought, hang on, he's supposed to kick it, he's supposed to hoof it, that's what goalkeepers do. And you get to realise he's actually playing as an extra defender. And I thought that was just actually something culturally advanced, football-wise, that the Italians and possibly other countries did over the English.
Yeah, I think they liked to do that anyway. I mean, at that time, the Italian football was tremendous stuff. I mean, obviously you've got some games that when they did cancel each other out, but some of the standard of football...
Yeah, Catalazio was kind of a dying art.
It was really then, yeah. I mean, you still found a few teams that could play that way if they wanted to.
But like you say, the first game
meaning
we had
a padlock.
Sure. I mean, the first game was as I leapt around earlier. Lazio against Sampdoria. You say?
Yeah, it was either 3-3 or 4-3. I can't remember what it was, but it was a very exciting game. People bought into it, and then the next 3 or 4 weeks we had Milan on with Van Basten playing and Hulliard and Rijkaard.
Yep.
And some of the games. I mean, I remember Milan Lazio 5-3, which was as good a football match as you could see. It was terrific stuff.
Well,
it was.
You've got some stats there.
Yeah, the 3 million people watched Channel 4's first Serie A.
Have you got
the
names there? Have you got their names?
From Wikipedia.
It was a 3-3 thriller between Sampdoria and Lazio.
3-3.
The following week, Milan beat Pescara 5-4. ITV, which had lost the rights to Top Flight, was showing Derby v Bristol City at the time.
I personally watched Derby v Bristol City, but there you go.
No, quite.
Can you remember what you said when Paul Gascoigne scored his first goal for Lazio?
It wasn't Gazza or Gullato. People used to say, "Oh, is that what he was saying?" No, I can't remember what I said. No,
what did you say?
It was.
I saw somebody. Somebody did quote something. I didn't say it, whatever it was.
But there's a wonderful piece on.
Do you
on
lie, these journalists?
By Sean Ingle wrote a brilliant piece in the Guardian about it, and it's basically when.
Was it in the Argos? I wouldn't have seen it.
No,
it's understandable.
In the Guardian. And then as his number 10 shirt is buried in a sea of blue, the electricity cackles in Peter Brackley's voice. The saviour has saved Lazio.
No, I've never said that in my life.
Have I? I mean, you mentioned actually also about Gazzetta Italia as well. I mean, did you get to work on that? Was that basically James Richardson?
James, it was mainly done by James Richardson in wherever he was at the time, Rome, Milan. And the thing was that he got access to the Italian players. The Italian players loved him. And the Italian press used to complain because all these guys, you know, Baresi, all these people, Lombardo, they would all go and talk to James, but they wouldn't talk to the Italian press. He would make them dance and do all sorts of stupid
things. And Elvis Costello.
Wigs on. And Elvis Costello was a big fan, yeah. And Elvis went to the stadium and...
he serenaded him, apparently.
Yeah, yeah. But James couldn't believe it. He was his hero, was Elvis, and then he actually got him to go to the game. And I'm not sure he did the commentary with him. I think he just sat and watched the game.
Oh, right. Because as I understood it, James wasn't a big football fan before he started it. He just seemed to be someone who was...
that's not true. He wasn't a football fan at all.
Oh, right.
No, he really was. I mean, he taught himself the rights and wrongs of football, the ins and outs, and he did it very quickly. He turned it into a show that was a bit more than football. Yeah. I always felt he should have done films. Things like, I think he could have done a film, but he could have done a Barry Norman job, his use of words. And his, but it wasn't...
It was more of an Italian culture show, wasn't it?
To me, it didn't even have to be about football. He was so good at coming out with these phrases.
This whole thing of sitting outside, you know, drinking his cappuccino while he's presenting. He's got the, you know, going through the papers. The Gazzetta della Sera says this. The Gazzetta della Sport says
that. But a lot of work went into that. I mean, I used to be involved in the programme to the extent I was seeing it when he was recording his pieces. You know, they weren't just done completely off the cuff. They were worked out and...
So did you have to do everything that you did from a cupboard in London? You didn't get to go out to Italy too many times?
There was a rumour that I did these things from Oxford Street. It's total nonsense. It was Regent Street.
Oh, okay, sorry.
Now, a lot of it's funny because for about 2 or 3 years, nobody realised this. And then the Daily Mail wrote a piece saying Brackley, the headline was Brackley cheats or something, goes to doesn't go to Italy. And so a few people picked it up off of that. But even now, I still get people who actually get quite disappointed. There'll be people out there, I'm sorry, everybody. There'll be people out there now who are actually disappointed to hear this because it did add to the thing. Yeah. They thought you were sitting there. And people used to send me letters saying, can you bring me back a scarf from, yeah, from Rome? And
it was you and Ray Wilkins that did it, wasn't it?
Yeah. Hopalong, as you referred to him once.
I think it was Ray who gave it away. He's getting into a taxi in Leicester Square about 20 minutes after he just said farewell from the San Siro. And this guy, oh, I've just seen you. He's sitting there, you're getting in a taxi.
I think, well, because the other thing is, because you know who does that now, is Adam Virgo does that. Yeah, BT Sport, yeah, on the French, yeah, games, yeah.
Okay, well, that brings us neatly on to the next. We're rewinding a little bit, because you left ITV to go to this newfangled thing called Satellite TV.
I'm going to write this down on this, because I can't remember this.
But, I mean, was that, did you see going to Sky as a risk?
Oh, to Sky. Well, I didn't go to Sky full time. That was the point. I went with Big Ron. I think too, we did an exclusive deal to do the Zenith Data Systems Cup.
Wow.
And they had a guy there called David Hill, who was a very big noise in Murdoch's setup. And he said, one day, he said, we're going to win a cup, we're going to call it the Premier League, and we're going to have a great, it's going to be fantastic. We said, yeah, okay. He said, but to start with, we've got the Zenith Data Systems. So we started off, and he did say, in fairness to him, he said, we're going to get, this was before all this happened, this guy. And I think at that stage, Sky needed a real lift from somewhere. And they got it, of course, with the Premier League. But he said, yeah, you can start off with this. So I did that with Ron. And I did that, and I did some games for Eurosport, which had a connection with them.
Yeah, that's where the Italian football thing started, wasn't it?
Yeah, I did do some Italian football on Eurosport, with David O'Leary mainly, and Trevor Francis. And then, of course, I didn't move on with Sky, so I went to do the Italian football with Channel 4 instead. But I was still connected to ITV a bit. I had moved into a bit of entertainment thing. I'm doing quite a bit of Arthur Dinner speaking, and I did a stage tour with George Best and things, which you can...
appeared on Surprise, Surprise.
On Surprise, Surprise, did I? Oh, yeah. I think I did, yeah, with that the guy, his dog, yeah.
Yeah,
with
the
dog or something. Yeah, I'd forgotten that one, yeah. I can't remember what I was doing. What was I doing? I don't know.
And Life's a Pitch as well.
Life's a Pitch.
I'll tell you what, the research you've done, AD, is actually bordering on stalking.
Honestly, Yeah. I mean, he's telling me things here about my family I didn't know. I mean, it's amazing.
All you need is Eamon Andrews to come crashing in now. That's the one.
Yeah,
okay. Anyway. Surprise, surprise, I can't remember what that was about.
That was the highlight of your career.
It obviously was. I mean, I've never forgotten it. I obviously did a few things like that.
It was a surprise, surprise. You just told him that it was on Surprise, Surprise.
Life's a Pitch. I think I did some acting on that.
That was with Jimmy Tarbuck, I believe.
That was. And I think it was with, I tell you, we did a pilot, and it was with... who was it with the girl? Paul Whitehouse was on it.
All right.
And it was the first time he'd done the Ron the Manager sketch. And he was trying it out on us, and we all just fell about. It was so fun.
Oh, brilliant. All right.
So he was on it, and the, I can't remember his name, the mimic that's on a lot now, one that does the voice.
Alison McGowan?
No, I did something with him fairly recently, something else. I wrote some bits that he did, but that was... Oh, a couple of guys now. John.
John Coulshaw.
John Coulshaw, yeah, right. Yeah, he was on it as well. So quite a few people on that thing. And Ted Robbins was on it.
Ted Rogers.
No, not 3-2-1, yeah. All right. So I've done a few obscure things, yeah.
So what's the next part of his career? Remind
me something I wanted to do at school.
You did very well. You did very well.
Actually, if you're local, where did you go to school?
Hove Grammar School.
Oh, right, you as well as I.
Yeah, there were two of us. Yeah.
Well, Dick Knight went there, I think.
Well, we've already heard some of your voices, but you did actually do some voices for Spitting Image.
Not really, no. That's where did it say that? No. I did the Jimmy Greaves voice. Yeah, the story with that was that... this is the Saint and Greavesy show, which I don't know
if you guys are
old enough to remember it. But
absolutely,
it was,
yeah.
Back in the night, I mean, this was big business. This was a 5 million audience for a Saturday lunchtime, which is unheard of, really.
Well, apart from us now, yeah.
Apart from this, which is obviously 3 or 4 times that. It was 15 anyway. Yeah. But God, the Saint and Greavesy show, it was a very, very different type of show.
Yeah.
But one week Jimmy was ill, and they said, and they knew I did impressions and things, and they said, oh, Jimmy can't do it, so we want you to do it using the Spitting Image puppet. With the Saints. So it wasn't just sort of a 5 minute interview. I'd do the whole program. And what they actually did, they put the puppet on the desk and I knelt underneath the desk. Don't ask me why. I don't know why I had to kneel under the desk. I couldn't see what was going out. I could hear the Saint laughing in the background. And I could hear all the crew laughing and everything else. And I just sat there, basically mumbled and bumbled away. And people apparently, I've heard since then, I've seen it on forums, and the people sitting in pubs just laughing at his head going up and down while this voice was coming from
below the desk.
Apparently it was funny anyway.
So how does your Greavesy impersonation sound, or is that going to ruin it for everyone?
I don't think he's remembered that well in terms of his voice and things.
Everyone remembers Greavesy.
People of our age certainly do. I mean, for me, Satan Greavesy show was like
Or maybe, well, I think it was.
I've got a lot of family from Hamilton in Scotland, and
right,
he always used to give the Ackies a hard time.
He did, yeah. I think that Satan Greaves, he started off as an offshoot of On the Ball, which is what Brian Moore did.
Yeah, it was.
As part of the world of sport.
Yeah.
And they had Ian St John as a regular guest, and I think Greaves alongside him. And I think obviously when Brian Moore gave up what he was doing, you know, there's this new show created. But
I think On the Ball came back many years later, didn't it?
It's not the same. It's not the same without Brian Moore. So
no. Okay, well let's move on to something else which you've done. I mean, you multifaceted career, quite frankly.
Write that one down.
I've got three bits. I'm multifaceted.
You're going to run out of paper. Cool.
You said before we went on air, this is what the kids will know you all about. And you started doing the voice, the commentary for Pro Evo,
the game thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
I mean, I'm baffled. But I mean, I've played.
It was definitely him. Don't ask me how it worked.
Well, I did do that. Yeah, I did it for about 5 years.
Because I mean, how does?
How did you get that gig? They came to you.
I think Martin Tyler helped me get that one. He couldn't do it or something. I can't remember what happened. I did one with Michael Owen. His World League soccer thing.
Yeah, right.
Michael Owen. There wasn't name dropping there. Michael Owen's World League. I think that was what Martin couldn't do. So I did that one. And then because of that, I got offered this other one. And it was with Trevor Brooking. And people show me things on forums. I can't get them to work myself, but people have said, have a look at this. And people say, hey, Brackley said I did this, and Brackley said I had a shot at goal, and I didn't. What actually happened, kids? What actually happened was we just recorded it in one day, and we were just given phrases to say.
So I stopped.
We didn't see anything.
We're good at that.
We didn't see any pictures. I think people think I'm sitting in their bedroom and while they're playing this, and commentating on their personal game.
The angel on their shoulder and the devil on their back.
What?
So we didn't even say, that was a shot from Smith. It would be, that was a shot from Smith. And then the computer put it all together. So it all sounded very wooden. Yeah. It would do. But people would just say, I was reading them.
Said, he said I did that and I didn't do that, you know. He kept repeating himself. Well, I've only said it once.
But I had to say all the names of all the players. And the other thing that was difficult was we weren't, for sponsorship reasons or whatever, rights issues, we couldn't necessarily say David Beckham. So I would say, Bookham. Oh, what a shot from David Bookham. And say by David Suman. Because people think I was just getting it wrong. But we weren't actually allowed to say David Beckham.
I
shouldn't say it now. It probably cost me 50 quid. Yes,
the station's going to have to close down now. We're just going to get swamped by lawyers.
So we weren't allowed to use the real names. On some of the games, not in all of them.
Sure.
But I used to say all the... So they would say to me, here's a phrase. And I would have to say it in different intonations. So I'd say, Smith. And did it all day long. I had to keep taking breaks to go out and get my voice back.
Yeah.
But it was all done in 1-2 days at the most. And I think people think I spent all year on it. You know?
Because it's very, I mean, it does flow when you're actually playing the actual
does
game.
Does it?
Yeah, it does kind of flow.
I'll take your word for it. I've never had a copy of this. I'm 44, for Christ's sake. I don't play this sort of thing.
It's another thing I'm writing down. I'm 44.
44, yeah. You used to be, I know, but...
It's a while ago now.
It's a while ago. No, so you have Pro Evolution Soccer.
Education, this show.
Various different versions of it. FIFA.
John Champion does it now, I think. And okay. I think they've updated it a bit. I think he does see something to you can actually commentate on. Because
I actually had to have a game last night because
You
played Pro Evolution Soccer.
No, I didn't know.
As a preparation for this show.
I played FIFA. But no, because just they listen to the commentary side of it, because normally I do it with the sound off, to be honest.
That's, thank you.
Hang on. So,
I'm off now.
Cheers, Peter. Yeah, thanks for coming. So hang on. Who does FIFA then?
Clive does one of the
Dez
has done one or two of them.
How long ago are we talking about with this product? Because I like to say it's totally alien to me.
2002 you started doing it.
Okay. Oh, and you,
what date was it?
2002.
In 2002,
it was April the 1st.
What?
Actually, we recorded it before they even started making the game. So that tells you how different it was actually.
So hang on. You've updated it every year since?
I haven't done it since. I stopped in about 2007.
There's a very concerning YouTube video about when he got axed because they were very upset. A few people got very upset.
There was a petition.
Really? It was.
My daughter said there was a petition. Yeah.
I signed it.
Yeah, there were two of us. I signed it.
Fantastic. Yeah, it didn't work.
It was good money.
I bet it was.
Someone said to me, why do you guys do all this? And I said, well, why do you think?
Yeah, it's a job, isn't it?
No, it was very enjoyable, everybody. I loved doing it.
Okay, so yes, if you're listening,
do one just for you. It wasn't sitting with you when you were playing the game, okay?
Dear me. Does he, so you really got a load of grief about that?
Yeah, no, yeah, my son showed me. People are saying
these people don't leave their bedrooms.
That's why
they need to get a life.
I mean, I'm just amazed.
They've only just got opposable thumbs, I think. But it's,
what else are we going to talk about? Okay, so apart from getting grief for doing a computer game.
Okay, well, we did want to talk about the art of commentary, actually, because, I mean...
Well, don't listen to that.
Well, basically, when the World Cup was simulcast this year, both on BBC and ITV, the BBC coverage had 10 million more viewers than the ITV. Now, ITV sports coverage is often derided. In fact, Al describes Andy Townsend as white noise.
I do.
He does. So, I mean, why do you think that they get the ITV get such a hard time over the whole thing?
Well, the first thing I would say is I think that the size of the audience would depend on what match is on. And I mean, if it's on BBC, that's what the audience would be. If it's on ITV...
I think we're talking about things like... When
they clash, yeah. I think there's always been a thing that we watch the BBC. Probably we all grew up...
Match
well.
Of the day is 50. Yeah. I mean, and that's something to be... To behold, isn't it?
I think the commercial breaks. I mean, Des Lynam will tell you that it was restricting him when he wanted to ask questions on ITV. He didn't have time to expand anything. And a lot of Jim Rosenthal and the others I've talked to about this. That is a problem. It's a problem for the producers as well because they want to expand an issue and they can't. They've got to go to the break. I think in terms of the talent, as they called in quotes, I think there's good people on either side. I think it just depends on personal tastes. A lot of people will tell you their favourite co-commentator was Ron Atkinson, who was ITV for a long, long time.
Sure. There was a brilliant drinking game with Ron Atkinson.
I can tell you a lot of big Ron stories, but maybe another time. he was along with Ray Wilkins. He was my favourite to work with. Ron was an education to work with and knew everything. I mean, some stories, maybe.
And you're fluent in Ronglish as well, then?
Ronglish, yeah. What did he used to say? There was one. He said.
He's got a list here.
No, he used to say the spotter's badge in a wide awake club has just given the little eyebrows at the far stick and the crowd scene. If the amusement arcade gets involved, there could be a lollipop on the reducer.
I mean, what on earth did that mean? I said, "What do you know what all these phrases mean?
Do you have the microfiche?"
Yeah. I said, "Do you know what they mean?" He said, "I haven't got a clue," he said, "but people seem to like them."
Well, he's the one that actually, he did, and we still use it. It's in common English now, is use the phrase early doors. You don't say, "I'm going to get there early." I said, "I'm going to get there early doors."
I asked him what that meant. He said, "I haven't got a clue." And then he said, "I think it's something to do with the mine shafts, the doors closing on the mine."
All right.
Apparently something to do with that.
Breakfast. Well, another one that found himself in hot water was Rodney Marsh, and he'd done lots of stuff with him as well.
Yes, he did. He made a few faux pas.
What is it about people you're working with? I think, should we just quit now, just in case?
Yeah, I'm a jinx. I did this tour, a stage tour, with George Best and Rodney Marsh. I mean, you can imagine. But we went all around Britain doing this, and Rodney was on it. He was another tremendous character, and he enjoyed it. They were big mates. They played together in America and at Fulham, of course. Yes, they played there. I had some good stories.
There's a great YouTube clip of actually them playing at Fulham in the mid-70s. They're both at the tag end of their career and end up tackling each other.
Yeah.
The same song.
Well, they used to do backstage, and they tried it one night on the tour, but they used to go backstage and George would put a 50p on his foot and he'd flick it across the room and Rodney would catch it on his foot. And then, of course, when they tried it, we said, "We must do that. It's great. It's terrific." And they're flicking this thing back to each other. Of course, they tried it on the stage and it didn't really work.
Oh, dear.
They dropped it. But they're a great character and we had some terrific nights. We did it down here in Brighton, the Dome, the Corn Exchange, one of those. And
was it a Q&A thing, was it?
No, it wasn't really. Well, we did a little bit of that at the end. We just did a bit. I did it with a guy called Mike Osman.
I remember him, met him a couple of times.
Very, very funny mimic. And he and I did, we did our act, really. So we sort of probably did an hour of the show. George and Rodney came on and did a bit on their own. They did a bit with us, just chatting. And then we had a Q&A with the audience for sort of 20 minutes at the end. And it was a nice mix. It was a couple of hours, the show, and we went all around Britain. We did the London Palladium. Yeah, it was
fantastic.
To be on at the Palladium was...
You've done radio, TV, theatre.
Yeah.
Six World Cups.
20 Cup Finals.
There's not much left, is there? I mean, and then the Albion Roar.
This is it, and it's still writing down notes.
It's like a dream come true, to be honest. It's like a dream come true.
So when you're at World Cups, obviously you're travelling the world. Is it like, what happens when you're not actually covering a game? I mean,
That's probably the hard part of it. I mean... I've been to quite a few World Cups. I've not been to one for a little while now. And when I was watching this World Cup, I'm thinking, oh, yeah, I'd love to have been there at the games. It's actually the bits around the game that are the hard parts because you've got quite a bit of time to kill sometimes. Or you're just travelling. Ian Dark, the BT sports guy, who was out there working for American TV, sent me an email on around about the semi-finals. And he said, I'm just getting my 19th internal flight. And I think he mentioned 19 internal. And he's older than me. He's a lot older than me.
The next World Cup's going to be exactly the same in Russia.
Because
I mean, that's just as
but I would never belittle it. It's a wonderful experience. And if you ever get a chance to go to World Cup, you haven't, then do go.
So I'm going to do this sort of like Shoot magazine type of thing. Do you have a favourite World Cup game that you commentated on?
I have a favourite magazine. It's Shoot magazine.
Okay, fantastic. I
preferred Match Weekly, to be honest.
I used to.
Roy of the Rovers.
Yeah. So, do you, I mean, obviously, you commentate on these various World Cups. Do you have?
Yes.
I mean, did you get, for instance, the Brazil Italy game in 82? Was that
82? It was the first one I went to, but I went to for radio, and I was just leaving BBC Radio. I went with the shy and unassuming Alan Green.
Oh yeah.
And,
where were
we? We both got sent home because I was going to TV, and I think Alan, they just didn't want to keep everybody there, so he and I went home after the first phase, I think. But so I didn't get to do any of the major games there. 86, I did the Maradona semi-final, and I
Belgium.
Did the France Brazil. People say to me, "What was the best game?" I think the best game of football I ever saw was the Brazil France quarter-final in 86, with the standard of football when the Careca was playing for Brazil, and I think Platini was still around with the French team. The football was fantastic. It was only 1-1 or something after extra time and penalties, but it was a terrific game. And of course, the semi-final was Maradona literally beating Belgium on his own.
Yes.
That was the most finest individual
performance. There's an absolutely brilliant image, isn't there?
Do you know what? That is actually a little bit of a cheeky image on account of what the fact it is Maradona, and in the background, looking all the way back, is about six defenders in a line. But what that actually is actually a bit of a cheat. Someone's taken a free kick.
Yeah.
Maradona's to the side of it, and the free kick has hit the wall, bounced out to him. So what that is actually a wall that's actually about to break, but it looks like six players approaching towards
him. There's a similar one of Guy Butters doing the same thing for Brian. I hope you're listening, Guy. He probably is.
No, I doubt it. I don't know if he knows how to turn the radio on.
He told me he's been on this show.
He has.
He's been the one ex-Albion player who I must have asked him 20 times and he won't do it. And I think he's starting to get cross with me now. Is Danny Callop. He just won't come on.
I think he's heard it. That's probably why. Yeah, okay, right. I'll speak to him for you. Because he was supposed to come to something we did the other day. I did a conference of wheelchair football locally.
You did
and Danny, unfortunately, was too. Danny, if you're listening, sorry you couldn't make it, and you were sorely missed. He's brutal in these wheelchairs.
He breaks the wheelchairs.
It's like rollerball, honestly.
Yes, he is. I remember James Carr.
Butters scored the. He probably told you about it. He tweeted everybody with it, so he actually scored a goal. Yeah.
But
we digress.
Guy Butters is actually a very good cricketer.
Is it? No, Danny drives a wheelchair like you drive a tank. He's a nutter.
Did they do
the electric wheelchair ones? The kids in that one?
Yes.
They are fantastic.
It's good stuff. The kids are wonderful. They're unbelievable. And
we've said this on this show before, and I mean, it sounds like it's not just pushing the ball around. It's bang, bang, bang. It's ticky tacker wheelchair.
Listener, if you get a chance to go and see them, it's terrific to watch, and they deserve your support, and I'll help them anytime I can.
Okay, so what next for you? You're going to the game today.
You tell me. I mean, you seem to have what's left of my life mapped out for me. Well, I've gone back to doing a bit of dinner speaking, which I did do a lot of 20 years ago, 20, 30 years ago, on for another 10, 15 years. And I've just gone back to doing it again because I had a major heart operation last year, which took a bit of recovering from. And I needed a fresh challenge, and I'll be doing some broadcasting, but to still present some programmes from time to time. But I want to do a bit more of the dinner speaking, so I've gone back with Gary Richardson from the BBC, a lot of listeners will know, I'm sure, from the tennis and Wimbledon and things. Mm-hmm. And he and I, we've revived our double act, and we're going around doing a mixture of stories and one-liners and impressions and appearing on the Albion Roar, things like the highlights of our life, you know, and things like that. One of the things I did do was the PFA dinner 20 years ago, and I did it sort of 30 years ago as well, and that is a big one to do. It's a big one to get right, but a big one to get wrong, so you shy away from it if you're not confident.
Whether I'd want to do that again,
I'm not sure.
I'd imagine you have a lot more material these days.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely. Well, actually, that is also we've got time
is it?
For.
You so, said 4 o'clock.
Sorry.
I'm paying you till 4 o'clock. So, you can park your car.
Yeah. So thank you to Alan Wes, of course. Thank you to Peter Brackley.
It's a pleasure. Good to be here, guys, and thank you for asking me. Campionato di calcio italiano.